welcome back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with the movers and shakers, those film and TV makers, the producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, costume designers, composers, film editors, sound mixers, sound designers, those VFX gurus that always dazzle and amaze me, stuntmen, choreographers, authors, you name it, and I'm talking to them. And we're doing some talking today about a very, very special film, about a very special woman, which was made by another special woman. The film is Audrey's Children. And that special woman is pioneering pediatric oncologist Dr. Audrey Evans and her groundbreaking work in the 1960s and 70s at Children's Hospital Philadelphia, or as it is commonly known, CHOP. And the very special filmmaker is none other than Amy Kanin Mann. Coming from Philadelphia, and as I've said before, you can take the girl out of Philly, but you can't take Philly out of the girl. CHOP holds a very special place in my heart for multiple reasons. And to see Audrey Evans' story finally being told is just fantastic. Audrey's Children is the untold true story of Audrey Evans, a British physician who came to the United States and really burst onto the scene in 1969 as the first female chief of oncology at CHOP. She battled sexism, medical conventions, subterfuge by her colleagues and peers. And through all this, she battled everything and developed the very first neuroblastoma staging system for treatment of pediatric oncology. She also co-founded the first Ronald McDonald House with Jimmy Murray, then general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles, which, as many of you may know, Ronald McDonald House was developed for families of patients so they would have somewhere to live when their children were getting treatment at hospitals. Her neuroblastoma staging system ultimately impacted the lives of millions of children and families around the world and has been a cornerstone in further research and development in the treatments of cancer. She came to CHOP in 1969. 1971, she developed her neuroblastoma staging system and proved it to be effective after battling peer review and board review by the hospital. She was a woman. Why listen to her? First Ronald McDonald House was founded in 1974 in Philadelphia. And her journey was really interesting. She came to the United States. She couldn't get a job as a doctor. She got her medical license in 1955. Went back to England, came back to the United States, did a brief stint at Boston Hospital, and then was in the hematology and oncology unit at University of Chicago, where she was recruited in 69 by C. Everett Koop, who was surgeon-in-chief at CHOP. And as many of you may know and remember, Koop went on to be the future U.S. Surgeon General. She was brought in by Koop to create a pediatric oncology unit at CHOP, and she stayed there for the rest of her career and beyond. Audrey Evans passed away in 2022 at the age of 97. She would have turned 100 years old this year on March 6th, which is why the film is being released in March in honor of Audrey's 100th birthday. What's really, now Audrey herself worked on the film. She was a great collaborator on this film and working with Amy and in working with Julia Fisher Farbman, who wrote the screenplay. Unfortunately, she passed away two weeks into the start of physical production of the film. So there is a lot of emotion in this film on multiple levels, in front of the camera, behind the camera, and the impact that Dr. Audrey Hemmings had on the world. And even at CHOP, CHOP is one of the leading researchers today for many diseases, including being at the forefront of gene replacement research, searching for a cure for BPAN, a beta propeller protein associated with neurodegeneration and related WDR45 disorders. And sadly, BPAN, as neuroblastoma was back in the 50s and 60s, an orphan disease. BPAN only afflicts 750 children worldwide. Now, in the United States, orphan diseases are defined as affecting fewer than 200,000 individuals. And that was set forth in the Orphan Drug Act of 1983, which means there is limited research and development due to the rarity of the disease and the affliction, the research may not prove profitable for pharmaceutical companies to develop treatments. Thus, there's no money. Thus, it makes the research more difficult. And something that's really interesting in Audrey's children is we get to see a lot of the research process, the trial and error of trying to find treatment. And not necessarily under the microscope, but how you take it from the microscope to back in the 1960s and 1970-71, before household computers, before cell phones, before all of this great technology we now have, you're taping 3x5 cards on walls to find patterns and shuffle things around to come up with treatments. So it's director Amy Kanin-Mann who brings Audrey Evans' story to life here. Written by Julia Fisher-Farbman, Audrey's Children stars Natalie Dormer as Audrey Evans, Clancy Brown as C. Everett Koop, Jimmy Simpson as Dr. Dan DiAngio. And you want to pay attention to Jimmy's performance and the character of Dr. Dan. Dr. Dan and Audrey had a friendship that lasted over 50 years. And they ultimately got married in 2005 when they were both over 80 years old. So it shows you true love is out there. You wait long enough. But Brandon Michael Hall steps in as Dr. Faust, another colleague. And then there is a scene-stealing performance by young Juliana Lane as a young cancer patient named Mia. Juliana she's scene-stealing. She steals your heart. She is amazing. Amazing. And be on the lookout for Juliana, because she will be coming out in another film directed by Bridget Smith in the not too distant future. But all of the children in this film are just amazing. And as you're going to hear in this interview with Amy, she talks about casting the children in addition to the adults. But the approach in production and the use of improvisation and ad-libs in all of these scenes with the kids, which when you see the film, you'll understand the importance of her decision in doing that rather than scripting the children, because the authenticity and the wide-eyed wonder that comes through, you can't script that. That just comes from within, from the heart. And watching Natalie interact with these children is priceless and precious. And for all you Philadelphia fans out there, your Eagle fans, I got to tell you, be on the lookout, because there is a nice cameo from Jim Murray Jr. Now, the younger generation may not remember who Jim Murray was in the Eagles organization, but he was the former general manager of the Eagles and co-founder of the Ronald McDonald House with Dr. Evans. And Jim's son, Jimmy, plays his father in this film. that comes in the third act of the film. But it's a nice little tidbit for all the Philadelphians out there and the Eagles fans. And something I didn't realize going into this film, and after doing a little homework, do you know there are now over 685 Ronald McDonald houses around the world? And the very first one started in Philadelphia. Production values are first rate in Audrey's Children, thanks to cinematographer John Kang, along with editor Matt Ramsey, who does an amazing job. As does John. John is a master of light. Really beautiful, beautiful work by both of them. Composer Genevieve Vincent, production designer Amber Uncle, set dresser Kimitha Cashin, and costume designer Sarah Marino. And last time I got to speak with Amy was about, back in 2010-11 for her work directing Texas Killing Fields. So it's been a little bit. And as you'll hear in our exclusive conversation, we cover everything from mice to Ronald McDonald, as Amy emphasizes the importance of capturing Audrey's story, particularly her groundbreaking research in pediatric oncology. She turned the world on its head with treating pediatric oncology and pediatrics in general. Amy has great praise for the cast, particularly Natalie and Jimmy, for their portrayals of Audrey and Dan. But we dive in deep, as comes as no surprise to all my regular listeners and readers, and we discuss the film's visual style, the use of vintage lenses to get an ektachrome kind of look of the era, the natural lighting, which truly is beautiful. I can't say enough about John's lighting and using windows and light coming in. The production design, including, as well as costume design and Audrey's vibrant wardrobe and the deliberate use of patterns, both in clothing, in Audrey's clothing, and in wallpaper patterns, in other areas, as well as you can actually see, and this was a very conscious decision on Amy's part, because of the way cells are patterned under a microscope. So there's a lot of metaphor that's happening here, and all of it enhances the film's emotional depth. But never forget Matt's wonderful editing and Genevieve's beautiful score, which is inspired by jazz. And here's a tidbit for you. A lot of the musicians who play the score was recorded live. They're from the renowned Baked Potato, Don Randy's crew here in Los Angeles, which just further enhances the narrative's impact. Because what's jazz about? It's all about patterns. And amazingly, when you see the film, it's hard to believe it was shot in only 23 days. You know, with a female star, female director, female writer, producer, and more. We get the female gaze and we feel as if we are in Audrey Evans' shoes this entire movie. She is one of the most significant female physicians in history, definitely in the United States, definitely in cancer research, definitely in pediatrics. So please enjoy this interview, my exclusive interview with director Amy Kanin Mann, talking about Audrey's Children. Take a listen.
Hi, Debbie. Nice to meet you.
Well, Amy, it is a thrill to actually speak with you again. We met and interviewed in person all the way back in about 2010-11 for Texas Killing Fields.
Oh, my goodness. That was a minute ago.
It has been a long time, Amy. And you have been a... Here we are. But you have been a busy, busy girl. turning out excellence. I have watched so many of the television episodics that you've directed. I saw Jackie and Ryan. And I just love your growth as a director, as a filmmaker that I've seen over the past 14 years.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you.
And I have to say, I am beyond tickled about this film, Audrey's Children. I'm from Philly. And okay. Chop, I mean, you do not grow up in Philly in the 50s, 60s, 70s through today and not know about Chop. And knowing about Audrey Evans. I still remember the whole press brouhaha with the Ronald McDonald House, the very first one, because it was big news, because the Eagles were involved, and Jimmy Murray, and Ed Renzi. So this is part of your culture if you grow up in Philly. And for what Audrey Evans started way back in the 60s, and then in through the 70s in particular, with her cutting-edge research, CHOP continues today, especially with their new research, their gene replacement therapy for BPAN and WDR4-5 diseases and disorders. So to showcase where it all really began with Audrey is just fantastic. Absolutely wonderful.
Means a lot. We were lucky enough to be able to tour CHOP quite a few times, and we were able to go into some of those research labs where they're doing the bespoke treatments, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what they're doing. I mean, I don't pretend to understand it, but you can just, like, the energy and the behind what they're pursuing. And then to turn around and see sort of just, like, taped up pictures of Audrey and Dan there, you know, like, they're mm-hmm. sort of, they even the people that are working there even now, you know, in the 2020s, understand what it is that they started.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
So for me with this film, it's like it was tailor-made for me, Amy. And I love what you have delivered, from your casting to your amazing production design, capturing Philly in that period. Luckily, the architecture doesn't change that much. In the areas of Philadelphia where you filmed, you even give us some beautiful rooftop images with City Hall behind it that just makes my heart go pitter-patter. So where do you even start? How did this story come to you? Because it takes somebody, and I really think it's important that we have the female gaze on this to stay in Audrey's POV. I think that makes a big difference, having you directing this over a male director. So I'm curious how this came to you and where you started with it.
Well, it came to me, Julia Fisher Farman is the writer and producer, and it came to me just as a script that I was like, would you be interested in doing this? And I was reading it, and then I came to the scene where Audrey is talking to one of her patients on the roof of the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and she's talking to the patient about how her patient, a child, should conceive of her own passing. And I thought to myself, my God, like, what, you know, no adult wants to have that conversation with a child. And yet here was this woman who was having that conversation with a child, and she had those conversations daily and then for decades. At the same time that she was fighting furiously for their health and to try to find ways to help them and revolutionize, you know, the pediatric oncology so that she could save them. And I just thought, that's the story of a person I would really like to try to help tell.
And that specific scene, I mean, I was tearing up with little Mia out there and the clouds and talking about, well, which one is Grandpa? And the heart-shaped one. And it's like your heart just melts and the waterworks get turned on. You have brought so much emotion to this film. But I can see why that would be the scene that would really grab you as you're reading the script. Was it difficult, first of all, to cast this film? You've done an impeccable job with the casting. I think Clancy is just superlative as C. Everett Koop. But then you cast Natalie and Jimmy as Audrey and Dan. Perfect chemistry. And you needed that for the truth in real life. So I'm curious how challenging the casting process was for you.
Well, as with any casting, you know, you're trying to discern the essence of the character, in the story that you're trying to tell. And then if you can discern the essence of the character, then you can discern the essence of character relationship to another character. And then when you're casting, you're just sort of looking for, because people's essences don't seem to really change, you know, as facile as an actor can be. You know, Meryl Streep is incredibly facile, and yet there's a sort of Meryl Streepness to all the characters that she embodies. So you're sort of like looking for that whatever that little spark is. And I knew that Audrey needed to be somebody who you really wanted to watch her think. You know, I mean, and that you believed her tenacity and you also believed her flaws. I mean, she's not a perfect character by any means. I mean, she's a little too much. She breaks the rules. She probably should break. She could probably make it easier for herself. So in that way, she's absolutely a hero, and she's also absolutely human. And she's sort of unique in the way that she thinks and kind of moves through the world. So for Dan, I knew I needed somebody who had a kind of steel of spine and also a kind of gentleness and a kind of different pace to him. And I knew it was Jimmy. I mean, I'm a big fan of Jimmy's work, and he was our first offer, and he said yes. So that was incredibly fortunate, because I wanted to make sure that there was a balance. I mean, it's also the movie, among many other things, in my mind, it's also a love story about two people who fall in love with the way each other thinks. They love and they fall in love with each other intellectually. And it's rare that you get to see that kind of love story, I think, between a man and a woman. So I was really excited about that. And the only way for that love story to work is if you felt like he wasn't going to dominate her and she wasn't going to dominate him and she wasn't going to be passive to him and he wasn't going to be passive to her, that they could go toe-to-toe with each other. Which, from all of the research and the people and talking to Julia, that's kind of actually how Dan and Audrey were. So we were so, you know, we're lucky and to be able to discern what we wanted for the cast and then for everybody to be available in game. Clancy is, like, it's bizarre how much she looks like.
I know.
Yeah. And then, I knew I wanted somebody who had gravitas and kindness, you know, which is sometimes not always a combination that's easy to find. And then for like Brandon Michael Hall, I wanted like the energy and the buoyancy and the enthusiasm of Audrey did a lot of mentoring, you know, so I wanted somebody who could really capture what it was to be somebody who was under the tutelage of somebody like Audrey and really respected the work that she was doing. And then the children, I just really love working with kids. We were so lucky to get Julie on. She is incredibly facile, has total control over her craft. And then a lot of the other kids, a lot of the dialogue in there was improvisation. So it was just about, you know, casting kids that felt right and then giving them a context to feel vulnerable enough to work with Natalie the way that they did.
Mm-hmm. And watching Natalie with the children, it's easy to see why it would be improv. Because she has such a beautiful spirit and rapport with them. When she's talking about the pink medicine and these special things, to take them out of the seriousness and make them smile. And I love watching her in the scenes with the children. And you are absolutely right. You lucked out with Juliana as Mia. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she's great. She's really great. I mean, that's really difficult to do. The scene where she passes. I guess we're giving away that might be a spoiler, but that's not easy for anyone to do.
Yeah.
And she handled it with grace. I mean, what you see on screen is take two, and I think there were two takes.
Oh my God.
So she nailed it.
Amazing. Now, once you had your cast in place, you've got this incredible script from Julia, and you bring in John Kang as your DP. I love the visual tonal bandwidth that you create, the softness that we have, your use of color. What were your conversations like with John to develop your visual grammar? Because this is an instance where we do have quite a few extreme close-ups and close-ups because of the children, because of the emotion, because of the mouse. Talk to me about how you developed your visual grammar on this one.
Well, I knew going in that the challenge of the movie would be because a movie about kids with cancer, that's a tough sell, honestly, yeah. Right? So the trick would be, directorially, the challenge is, how do you make the movie visually and viscerally compelling and feel authentic and feel visually complete so that you can seduce the audience into the world and they hopefully want to be there with all the elements that I have at my disposal, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, composition and lens choices and production design and wardrobe and music, so that you kind of have a complete world, and hopefully the audience, if you're lucky and good, you know, you can hopefully get the audience to come with you on the journey, and by the end of an hour and a half, they happen to have been told a story about kids with cancer. And part of that was, absolutely, you're right, developing a visual lexicon that would be constant. I knew I wanted it to feel like Ektachrome, mm-hmm. Even if it weren't necessarily in the 60s, it just feels like the 60s. So I knew I wanted... we tested a lot of lenses, and we landed on the Hawk lenses, which are a vintage lens. I've come from a photography background, so I'm a pretty camera-heavy director, and I composed everything. And what I loved about working with John was, and I say that to anybody I'm interviewing for when I'm going to work on a movie, because every director works differently in terms of how they work with the DP. So I said to John, like, look, I don't pretend to know how to light, but I do know how to compose. So what we're looking for the light is just, I want it to feel incredibly natural. I want it to feel very organic. I want it to feel like it just happened to be there. And, you know, part of the challenge is we're in a hospital a lot, so the windows were really critical in how we played with the windows. And he's just incredibly painterly with his use of mm-hmm. light. And, we really liked working together. I just loved, I would sort of say, look, here's the shot. And then, like, he would just paint it with light. And so, it worked out really beautifully, I think. I think we achieved what we wanted to achieve, which is that it felt, and hopefully we achieved what we achieved, which is that it felt consistently kind of compelling, and that you just happened to be there in the world. You know, sometimes when you have movies that are set in a period, it can feel a little not real. And mm-hmm. I wanted, like, that dirt, that grime. I wanted dust motes. I wanted dirty clothes. I wanted, you know, I wanted the dirty light. You know, I wanted things that felt that you were just there with her.
Mm-hmm. Well, you definitely achieved that. And there are so many shots that look like Vermeer painted them, with the way the light is utilized. And
lighting, yeah.
I mean, just absolutely gorgeous. Now, a big part of this is your costuming and your production design and set dress. And this is where a lot of color comes in, primarily through Audrey's clothing, her dresses. I love that, I'd say, 90% of her clothes are florals and prints. They're vibrant. They're alive. They're happy. She's got a couple solid, you've got that gorgeous blue evening gown for the gala. You've got that red suit. And then there's a green. Powerful moments where she wears those. But otherwise, it's all of those florals with color that makes you feel happy. And I can see where a child would feel happy seeing those things. So I'm curious about working with, and of course, Amber, your production designer, did an amazing job with Audrey's house, the interior of that, the wallpaper. Here again, that beautiful light, the arched light in the living room. Talk to me about working with your department heads here to create this beautiful, beautiful canvas.
Yeah, I mean, they did an incredible job at executing, because we, you know, it's an independent film, so there's, you know, 23 days and a limited budget. You know, this is an independent film, yeah. And all this credit goes to Julie Fisher-Fardman, who raised this money herself from beginning to end. It's, there's no deep pockets, there's no extra time. So, the department heads were just amazing. And also, we had no stages. Everything is a live set, right? So they were really incredible at being able to execute the vision for price and on time. It's really a tall order. And the vision, you're absolutely right about her wardrobe. I mean, we did a lot of research, obviously, looking at old photos of Audrey and what she was wearing, and also just talking to people who had worked with her at the time. And that those jewelry choices and those pattern choices by her as a woman working as a physician with children were very deliberate. You know, she wanted the children to feel happy. She would wear a little brooch or a little necklace or earring so that she would have something to talk to the kids about. So we actually used some of her actual jewelry in the film, which was really special.
Oh, wow.
So we tried to replicate that idea. And then for me, this is one of those things where, like, as a director, you put it in and you're pretty sure no one's going to really notice it, but they might feel it. Like, they might not, like, be able to point it out, but they might feel it. For me, there was definitely a visual theme having to do with patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talked to Audrey, she told me about having been a child with tuberculosis and being isolated in the UK because that was just the normal treatment. And apparently she had mentioned that to Julia, and Julia and I were able to incorporate it into the film. And I thought to myself, okay, my gut instinct is telling me that this is the impetus for the partly. She knows what it is to be a child who's ill. She knows what it is to be a child who's isolated. And that, so I was thinking about that when I was shooting the tuberculosis scene. I wanted to have the rain and the patterns on the window that, you know, when you're a child in distress, you can get myopic. You can be able to focus. And that this was somebody who had a natural ability to see patterns. So there's a visual through line between that and then the patterns that she's choosing for her own costume, the patterns of the wallpaper in her apartment, that she tears one level of wallpaper off to reveal another pattern, which all leads to the pattern of the cards on the wall when they're discerning the staging system. So that you see, hopefully, when you feel a through line of this is somebody who is sometimes awkward and sometimes making mistakes and jumping unnecessarily into swimming pools, but she has this gift that she can see the patterns of things, and she's brave enough to follow that gift, and that leads to her discovering what she discovers in terms of the eating system for neuroblastoma, which then helps her, circling back, help the children that she identifies with, having been a children who was ill herself. Mm-hmm.
And of course, cancer, you look at it under a microscope, and it's all about patterns.
Exactly.
And how that is differentiated from normal cells. You put so much thought into this film, Amy, and it all pays off. It's there on the screen with so much love. You feel that in this story and in this film. Now, how was the editing of this one? Because you're inserting, you know, her own flashbacks, young Audrey, and we see a little more with each one that we get. And then going back and forth, you share the wealth with screen time for the kids. You share the wealth with moments between Audrey and Coop and Dan, and then a lot of alone time for her. So I'm curious about the editing process and finding the pace and the emotional beats here.
Yeah, I mean, my editor is Matt Ramsey, who I've worked with before, and I love him. I adore him. One of the things that we have in common when we approach film is he loves music. I play viola. And so we kind of talk about things in a musical way, and that's sort of how I tend to think about structure. I tend to, you know, even when I'm writing or when I'm shooting, when I'm figuring out my shots, and certainly when I'm editing, I think about pacing. Like, here's a moment where things need to be staccato. Here's a thing where things need to be legato. We've earned a moment where things can be still. Now we need to quickly shift to a passage where things must have great movement. And that tends to inform not only my shots and my composition and when and how and why I'm moving the camera, but certainly in terms of editing and when to kind of omit information or allow information to come in. Hopefully it builds on itself like almost like a sonic motif and becomes hopefully a visual motif that, again, you may not remember that you saw it before, but you might feel it. So we were able to incorporated in post the documentary footage that we found of Sydney Farmer, which we found completely just messing around. We were just squirrel thing of how do I not make the film feel too claustrophobic. So mm-hmm. I want to kind of build the world out a little bit. So we were looking at some footage, and we ended up incorporating the documentary footage of Sydney Farber and the child that you see at the beginning of the film, who was a patient at CHOP. And then the flashbacks were to the tuberculosis ward. I knew I wanted those to just feel incredibly elliptical, just sort of like as trauma memory is. Mm-hmm. It sort of comes up suddenly. It's very quick. It's usually almost like a photograph. It's not usually like dialogue or a whole sequence of events. It's more like an image that you remember. So I wanted to shoot it. So I shot it as like what she would have seen as a child. Again, the window, the nurse, the bed. And then just trying to deftly just sort of have a moment of it, a beat of it, so that you felt like you were experiencing the trauma flashback with her and could identify with her because, you know, we all have those moments. So Matt, I'm just sort of like, here's the material and here you go, here's the footage. And he was really at being able to execute that.
Wow. Of course, because music is so important to you, Genevieve Vincent does a score for you. What were you looking for musically from Genevieve with the score?
Yeah, I just, you know, I said before, I gave her a basically impossible task because I was like, I knew it needed to be jazz because to me, I knew that it couldn't be anything that was in any way sappy. You know, it needed to be music that was active and thinking and had a kind of like buzz to it. So mm-hmm. that it felt like her thinking. So I said to Genevieve, I wanted it to be jazz, like sort of mid-century jazz-ish. And then also, but so deconstructed that it could segue into something tonal when we had this tonal moment. And she did a fantastic job of delivering. She actually got musicians from the Baked Potato, which is an old LA jazz club.
Yes.
And they just like, again, like just the rest of my incredible department heads, no, very little time, very little money, and somehow managed to pull it off. So, yeah.
Just an amazing job, Amy. And of course, I love the fact Genevieve pulled in some of the guys from the Baked Potato, Don Randy and all of his guys over there. So I know them well. And their music. And again, patterns. Jazz
right,
patterns.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Amy, this has been so wonderful to get to speak with you again after all these years and about such an incredible film. It is wonderful, heartwarming. I can't imagine anybody who will not be moved by seeing Audrey's story. Job well done!
Thank you. That's high praise. I appreciate it. And from your mouth to God's ears, absolutely.
Thanks so much, Amy. You have a great rest of your day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye. And that was my exclusive interview with director Amy Kanenman talking about Audrey's Children. Audrey's Children is in theaters right now. It opened this past Friday on March 28th. See it, see it, see it. You will not be disappointed. It's informative. It's educational. It's entertaining, and it will just make your heart beat 1,000 times over. So, that is all the time we have today. I know this show is a little bit shorter than most, but I wanted you to just focus on Audrey's Children today, because it is such an important story, and one that I'm so glad somebody has finally told about this incredible woman and her work. So, until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.